dbkmediaservices.com. You are listening to the Triple Crown Family Fun Center SVC Sports Talk Podcast. SVC Sports Talk is brought to you by SVCSportsZone.com and Triple Crown Sports. Now, here are your hosts for the Triple Crown Family Fun Center SVC Sports Talk, Shane Combs and Jeremy Ward.
Hello, SVC fans, and welcome to the Triple Crown Family Fun Center SVC Sports Talk podcast show. I'm Shane Combs, SVCSportsZone.com, joined as I always am by my good friend, and I'm sure yours as well, Jeremy Ward. Jeremy, how are we doing this week?
Good, Shane. Really kind of an exciting week in the league, and I'm looking forward to the show. I think we've got some great input from the fans in the inbox that are going to kind of drive tonight's show, so I'm really excited about talking some baseball and softball as we get ready to head to May and maybe some consistent weather. We've talked about that each week, and we still haven't been able to get 3 days in a row where it seems like it is normal. So
no. Well, and I'll tell you, this past week, maybe we could name it separation week, if you will. It just seems like the league, by no means is decided yet, but it definitely has kind of allowed a couple different teams in baseball, softball to maybe come to the top a little bit and at least make it theirs to lose, if you will. I know on the baseball side, Piketon Westfall at 8-1, and just finding a way to win close games. There's been so many close games on the baseball side. I know Westfall and Piketon both beat Paint Valley 3-0 at home this year. They both beat Uniota by one. And in fact, I think Westfall beat Uniota by one on both occasions already. Number two arm Lewis been really great in a couple starts for Westfall. Piketon survived a scare from Adina on two occasions where they've been down to their last at bat and figured out a way to come back and win. It's just been a real interesting thing where everyone's beating up on each other, but then at the end of the week you find Piketon finding a way to survive at 8-1. Just on the baseball side, Jeremy, I know you don't get to see as much of the action, but I know how much you are a fan of the game and follow the scores. Just your take on the baseball race to this point.
Shane, the games that I've been able to catch, even if it's just been a few innings here or there, it's just remarkable, the competitive spirit, I think, maybe is the best way to put it. I think these kids have spent so much time growing up playing against each other. They're just not giving in at all. So there's just not a night off, and everybody, even if it's just fans coming over from the baseball game to the softball game, or people talking at school, or I might run into in public, there's always a story about an ending of a game or a situation that happened in the middle of the game. And it truly has been exciting, from top to bottom this year. And, I really look forward to, how it all plays out heading into the tournament.
Well, Jeremy, as we shift our gears over to softball, on the baseball side of things, we're talking about all of these close games. And softball's had their share of close games. But this past week, I guess what catches my attention is Uniota's ability to really take control of the league with two convincing wins, with beating Zane Trace and then beating Westfall. And now they jump out. They're 8-1. Assuming Zane Trace holds serve Southeastern when that game's played, they're going to be at 7-2. But you throw in the fact that Zane Trace, Westfall still play head-to-head and what a lot of people will call an elimination game in terms of the SVC race. Uniota's going to play Adina, Huntington, Paint Valley, Piketon, Southeastern here the rest of the way out. Now, there's some capable teams in there, some capable pitchers, but from just a Uniota standpoint, you have to be really impressed with their ability to kind of take control of this thing over the past week. Give us your take on the Lady Shermans in the past week.
Well, very impressive win, starting with a 1-0 victory over Piketon. Just an exceptional matchup between Adrian Dunn and Brooke Blevins, really going head-to-head. And, he had three offensive players have multiple hits, and then pretty much nobody else could get anything going. But then after that, Uniota just really opened it up and took control against St. Trace and Westfall back-to-back evenings, and really both of those games were were over really, really quickly. And, you know, you talk about that second time around making adjustments, and probably the most notable adjustment for Unieta was having senior Ashley Flott back for the first time and, you know, really just made their lineup a little deeper. And we talked about matchups before and how many pitches they see. And, you know, I think there was four innings in those two games where they forced Gina Rauschert and they forced Morgan Gino to throw over 35, nearly 40 pitches an inning. And boy, that's hard to overcome.
Absolutely. Well, I'm glad you mentioned Ashley there in your description, because just as I like you, when I'm on the softball side of things, I see the scores come in. Obviously, I don't get to see games in terms of league matchups, but just seeing her name in a couple box scores this week kind of jumps right out at you as, oh, wow, the last thing this lineup needed was another really elite athlete. Just speak a little bit more on the depth. Is that where Uniota is going to really separate themselves here if they are able to continue in down this road?
Well, Shane, when they're at their best, I think it's just amazing the difference that Ashley makes. The very first inning, she got on base against Zane Trace, and that was her first full game that she had played. She gets on base against Zane Trace. She's on first, ground ball hit to short, and she beats the shortstop to the bag on the force out. And that's the kind of impact that Ashley has, and it just puts so much pressure to, you know, keep her off the bases, and it's just, you know, another piece of that lineup. And as you've looked from game to game, there's been different players step up and have big games. And then, you know, Gina Wright, her consistency, having two or three hits every single night's just been tremendous for the Lady Shermans.
Yeah, Jeremy, I guess a little bit on this line here. We've been talking about throughout the spring shows the importance of seniors and senior leadership and all those things. I got caught in a conversation here in the past week or two, and I really wanted to get your take on a couple things here. First, I want to just talk seniors from maybe a negative side. I've had some people tell me in spring sports, you're a month from graduation. I guess for lack of a better term, you'll hear some people use the term senioritis. Where they get down to a month to go, and they're trying to balance still being that high school student athlete, but obviously they have a bigger picture coming in a hurry here. What's been some of your take? You've had a lot of experience in spring sports. Do you see a negative side with seniors sometimes, that maybe it's easier to keep a younger team hungry in terms of getting better, or do maybe we make too much of that?
Well, I think it works both ways, Shane. I mean, this time of year, the thoughts of prom and graduation, your summer plans, your beyond high school plans, they certainly can lead to athletes checking out mentally. It's difficult to overcome any sort of slump or adversity at this part of the year when that calendar turns to May, and that's the final month of your school year and your school life, you know, for most of these kids at the high school level. And, you know, unfortunately, sometimes those April showers bring more than just May flowers. They can bring some disappointment, an ending to a career or an abrupt ending to a season. And, you know, I think athletes, you know, this year, they're going to have already graduated before they start sectional play, before the track athletes maybe even compete at the league meet in the postseason at all. And, you know, you just think of the avalanche of emotions that comes with graduation, and that's a lot for the kids to deal with. So, you know, senioritis, sometimes that's the going term. But I think you do have to put yourself in that, you know, in their shoes and look at the perspective of how difficult that time is for a teenager kind of trying to figure out, you know, where they're going next while they're trying to finish up their commitments to their team.
Well, I think you make a good point in there when you start talking about the calendar turning May, because with a lot of schools, the desire to get back to school earlier and get out earlier because of the OAA-driven world now, I think it's going to lead to more and more of this. A second thing I wanted to get your opinion on, especially as much success as you've had with coaching on the girls' side of things, is the conversation then went to, it's sometimes harder to get a real improvement from girls as they get into their junior, senior season. Some coaches have talked to me about how with the early maturity of girls, that they always talk about that 8th to 9th grade year, possibly that 9th to 10th grade year. And I think this is really intriguing in track because your track times are your track times. You know, a lot of times experience on the softball diamond or baseball, on the basketball court or volleyball court, the experience can really play a factor. But a lot of times track is such a here's your athleticism, here's how high you jump, here's how fast you run. Have you seen a little bit of that in coaching girls that maybe you don't get on the guy side as kids start to get older in their careers?
Well, I think what happens there is, we tend to look at that from a male perspective, which is completely unfair. And whether it's, being a dad or being a coach or just the casual fan, you always want to relate things back to, your own experiences or what have you. And, the facts just are different with girls, and the physical maturity is going to come much sooner, and you're going to see a lot of, a lot of girls. I think track's a perfect example. Your time as a freshman, as a distance runner, it's not like scoring 12 and a half points as a game as a freshman in basketball, where you think, oh, you'll score 20 as a senior. There's not going to be that kind of improvement. You certainly have a more condensed window of how far you can take your skills. And, there's no question that it's more important that the mental side of the game and understanding what your limitations are, how you can, just having the maturity to recognize the ability to maximize your strength and minimize your weaknesses because that physical growth may not be there. So, I think that's a great question. Both these are great questions, and they're not meant to be excuses, making excuses for the athletes. It just kind of brings to light the things that they deal with, and our perspective versus their perspective. A lot of times it's the adults that talk a lot about that stuff, and the kids, they really don't. It isn't that big a deal to them.
Well, I think you make some great points there, and I promised some different people in conversation that I would make sure I asked you early in the show this week, because I knew with your experience in spring sports and then your experience coaching girls in multiple sports and stuff would give a great perspective. So I hope some of our loyal listeners out there get something from those answers there, and that's going to be an ongoing discussion. I have a feeling some really good stuff there.
Yeah, Shane, before we move on, just real quick, just maybe I'll turn to you here and ask about some of the intangibles that you think the seniors offer, and I think you could relate that to the girls. Maybe the physical end of it caps out, but the mental maturity. How do you think that relates to boys? Do you see seniors that take to show more growth than maybe the intangibles?
I think, and this is probably true in all sports, I think we're seeing it a little bit, maybe in our Paint Valley baseball program here in the past week or so. When you're a younger team, a lot of times these kids are used to, especially if they don't play summer baseball, they're just used to playing 12, 13, 14, 15 games. I think sometimes the varsity schedule of, hey, here's 27 games in about 35, 40 days can sometimes be a little overwhelming physically and mentally. I think what seniors give you intangible-wise is they give you the ability to face very few things that they haven't faced before. You think about it. If you have a team of 7, 8, 9, 10 seniors on a softball team, chances are somewhere in their career they've experienced what it's like to be on a winning streak. They've probably even experienced some adversity. They've probably upset somebody. They've probably, unless they're really, really good, they've probably been knocked off by someone they shouldn't have. So they understand all the different things. They understand a rainout. They understand what it means to play Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Friday in a league schedule, in the league grind. So I think those are some of the things and leadership things and practices and some things that you get from seniors that have just been through it. I think is the way I would respond to that. Would you agree with some of this stuff?
Oh, absolutely. And I think those are good points and fair points to speak to. I didn't want us to come across as, nitpicking, at the athletes as they get ready to graduate. And I think you made some
fantastic
points about real life and what it's real about. And I think this is what really puts the perspective of how do sports help these kids grow in a meaningful way that's going to benefit them in their professional lives to come?
Yeah, great topics, and I look forward to some of the feedback from this show to see where this conversation can go in the future, because I do think there's some really good things there. Well, Jeremy, on the other side of the break, we have a return of our Have a Clue Blue segment, which means you will help us view the game through the perspective of those in charge. Have a Clue Blue, one of our favorite segments here. It plays off a little bit of our Liar Liar Stripes on Fire, as many of you have been with us throughout the winter. We had some great discussion on talking officiating in basketball, and this is carried over, and someone in the inbox so cleverly named Have a Clue Blue, and this week it's talking about the two umpires a lot of times using the fact that there's only two of them maybe as an excuse, if you will. It talks about how a referee in basketball doesn't warn the point guard about the first traveling. They just call the traveling. They see it and they call it. So it's talking about maybe a balk and maybe an umpire talking about if you're not going to call it in the first inning, you can't call it in the fourth inning. And I you know, the one thing it says here in the email, and this is where you could talk to this too, Jeremy, it says they're not sure about the equivalent in softball. They're assuming it would be something to do with the illegal pitch,
right,
and things like that. But I guess I'll ask you a couple things. You can talk about the balk or the illegal pitch a little bit more if you want. But I think the biggest thing I get from this email is there too much discretion in terms of the way we look at things as an umpire, or should there just be more of a cut and dry? Here it is. Call it if you see it.
Well, I think that's probably the fairest way to look at it. You know, honestly, I think rules are rules, and if it's a rule, it's a rule, and either you're doing it or you're not doing it. There's a lot of a lot comes into play with the balk that isn't necessarily up, you know, for debate. You know, either you pause or you don't pause. I mean, if you're debating was the pause long enough, well, then you're kind of saying that there was a pause. If there was a pause, right, there was a pause. You know, the only situation where I see leniency in high school baseball at the varsity level is during cold weather or extreme weather, when the umpires usually are going to go out and say, fellas, it's not a big deal. You can go to your, you know, you can put your hands to your mouth, blow in your hands, to lick your fingers, whatever you got to do.
Right.
That's okay. When normally, you know, that's against the rules. But, you know, I think they make those adjustments. Otherwise, you know, you don't see a line judge in football warn the defensive end because he was offsides. And just like they make the reference to the point guard. So I don't see why at the varsity level there should be, you know, these warnings or these huge discrepancies in how it's called.
Yeah, I think you make some good points there. I think sometimes what happens, and I'm, to be honest, I'm just not as familiar with softball to make the connection here. But I know, say, in a baseball situation, if the first couple guys that get on base in the first or second inning, let's say they do not have the steal sign, or let's say that the pitcher decides not to throw over, a particular thing may not come into play until the third or fourth inning. Because a lot of times, right, if you're a base runner and you're looking for that first move to steal, or if the pitcher does something that might trigger you into your secondary lead, but then they throw over, a lot of times those things can happen. So I think I understand where the emailer is coming from here in terms of sometimes the umpires maybe saying, well, I probably should have called it in the first inning if I was going to. To me, if you miss it in the first inning and then you miss it again in the fourth inning, now you've missed it twice,
right, exactly,
similar to the travel call. So I think there's some interesting things. I do want to let the fans know that they can send their Have a Clue Blue ideas into the inbox. That's admin1@svcsportzone.com. And, you know, Jeremy, I guess real quick, I'll open it up to you. Are there some different topics that jump out at you that you'd like to see us maybe include in this segment in weeks to come, or just kind of wait and see what the fans have to say about it?
Well, I actually was at Kroger's this morning and had a question from somebody that I know, and then before I left, in comes an umpire. so I was able to address all that, you know, just while I was trying to buy some bananas and a thing of donuts. But, you know, basically coming back to the illegal pitch situation, I mean, there's been some rule changes in softball, and there's a lot of people that maybe don't completely understand it. And, you know, there was some debate this past week over, you know, was there a long enough pause? Well, again, either you pause or you don't pause. There's not like a timer that you have to put on it. But, you know, taking the sign when you're not on the rubber. You know, a lot of times the girls, their routine will involve going behind the pitching rubber, then stepping up to pitch. You know, none of that. It's not necessarily the same as baseball where you can't take the sign off the rubber. You may not even be taking a sign. I've heard some people complaining a little bit about that, and some people asking questions. And, you know, like I said, I was able to talk to an umpire a little bit this morning, and, you know, pretty much just confirmed that, you know, there, a lot of people just aren't clear about the rules changes. And the best way to deal with that is just to go look at the rule and look at the points of emphasis that they put in the rule book each year. And it really clarifies things for everybody.
Fans, again, let us know in the inbox some of your ideas for this segment, and I'm sure that we'll continue to have some good discussions here in the remainder of our spring show. So, fans, up next, we turn our attention to baseball and softball, as one fan is ready to start picking postseason awards in softball, and another wants to talk about one of the hottest baseball teams in the area. Fair, unfair. Again, people who have listened to SVC Sports Talk throughout the year know that throughout our inbox questions that we've kind of established this little thing of fair, unfair, where we take the comment of the fans, and I throw it out to Jeremy and get his take on this. And Jeremy, this one's talking player of the year already in softball, perhaps a little early, but again, for SVC Sports Talk, just for us to talk a little sports, it's never too early just to have some fun with these things.
Right.
This one here says, Brooke Blevins, Uniota, Player of the Year. So I'll throw that out there. They actually go on to say perhaps a Geno, a Rosser, a Lido, or some other Uniota player, but they wanted to know Brooke Blevins, Uniota, POY, fair, unfair, and then why.
Well, I think Brooke certainly earns the merit in this conversation. Again, it comes back to how you look at the award. It's really hard to argue her effectiveness. I mean, she's consistently flirted with double-digit strikeouts. I don't think she's walked 10 players all year. You know, but it's also unfair not to consider, you know, Gina Wright and the things that she's done offensively and also pitching for Uniota. You know, she has she's just on a ridiculous pace this year as far as hits and runs scored and her on base percentage. And I think she's only lost one game that she's pitched, and I think she only lost one game last year. So, I mean, she's certainly, you know, a huge impact player in the league. And then you move on, you look at the other players that are, you know, they're elite pitchers in the league, and Geno, Rosshart, Lytle, and also offensive threats as well. And, you know, it all brings us back to that conversation, you know, should we have an offensive player of the year, defensive player of the year, because in baseball and softball, the pitcher is such a critical role. Sometimes it makes it really difficult to decide whether or not, you know, your player of the year is truly a holistic picture, or, you know, should it be something that you divide and really recognize that pitcher and recognize, you know, your overall MVP, if you will.
Well, let me throw a little extra fair unfair at you here, Jeremy. I guess when I follow a lot of the box scores and you see how much a Geno means to Zane Trace, and Elena Lytle's had an incredible year, and they're a couple one-run losses away from really being in the mix. Is this a year, when we talk all the balance of Uniota, that perhaps a Uniota player is going to be the odd girl or odd girls out because of their balance, or would the league champion still deserve a quality look from whoever their coach feels is their top pick?
Well, you're definitely going to get that quality look that you referred to. I do think a lot of people look at player of the year in terms of impact, and you know, the old question, what would you do if you remove this player from that team? Mm-hmm. And I think it's a lot harder to argue from a Uniota perspective, where they have so much depth and they have just maybe more balance from top to bottom. Whereas, you know, other teams, you know, maybe, you know, do that. You trade them places. You know, do they have the same type of success, or do they have the same type of impact on a team that might be middle of the pack to get them over the hump? And, you know, when you look at it that way, I honestly feel like, you know, the league as a whole is very strong. We'll talk a little bit more about that later. But, you know, it's hard to argue that almost every team is better than they were last year. And Zane Trace may be that exception. They're probably not quite as strong. So I suppose that gives Geno even more impact as far as player of the year, even though she may not have, you know, the numbers or the dominance that she had a year ago, you know, at least in the eyes of some.
Well, let's talk a little bit about the depth of the league, and a little bit maybe about what could decide this league. I know with Huntington, we just mentioned Lytle and Piketon. I've had two or three really good softball people throughout the league talk about how capable their pitching is on a given night. Even Paint Valley with Riley, I know, has pitched a couple good games against Huntington this year, pitched a pretty good one against Piketon. Those are the types of teams that maybe over the 14-game haul, not able to maybe actually win the SVC title. But on one night here, with five league nights remaining, those are some pitchers that could definitely impact the league race, couldn't they, Jeremy?
Absolutely, and sometimes it's style is such a big factor. And we talked a couple weeks ago about how matchups play a big role in the games, and sometimes you just can't look at the scoreboard or the box scores and, you know, compare common opponents. I truly believe if your schedule works out to where you're seeing a different style of pitcher every game, you know, that's harder to adjust to for your hitters. Sure. And, you know, whereas you might see three games with the harder throwers and then have your next week, you know, with maybe some of your spinners or some of the players that don't throw as hard, well, that's a little bit easier than going back and forth every night. So I think that does play a role, and sometimes people don't think about that.
Sure. Well, I'll tell you what, Jeremy, as we shift gears in the inbox here, we look over to baseball here. What jumps out at you in the inbox that's good for discussion this week?
Well, we have one here, Shane. Says, first, I wanted to say thank you for doing the Zane Trace baseball game at the VA this year. My family and I enjoyed listening to the game. I know the league title is going to be tough at this point, but I was wondering what you guys thought of their chances for a tournament run. What do you like about them? What concerns do you have? And I'll throw that to you.
Well, I think obviously Zane Trace is one of the hotter teams of late. I think as they go into the postseason, the first thing that jumps out at me is they're going to be right there with an opportunity to take the top seed. That is, if they're treated correctly. Now, keep in mind, and we'll talk about this a little bit later, but keep in mind they go down there with Southeastern into the vote. So a lot of times, as you heard us talk about in basketball, that can get a little tricky. Last year, Zane Trace wasn't treated maybe perfectly down there, and it kind of led to a tougher district matchup. As far as Zane Trace as a team, though, you got to like their ability to hit, their depth, all nine spots. I know in coaching against them, you don't get too wrapped up of a 2-3-4 this inning or 6-7-8. It just doesn't matter. You know, their nine hole can hit, their six hole can hit, their leadoff guy's fat. You know what I mean? It just, there's athletes and there's really quality players all the way through. It's a team with great pitching depth. But I guess if I had a concern, it would probably be on the defensive side of things. They've had some nights where they've haven't made the routine play as much as I know Coach Allen would like. So when you look at their pitching, it is solid, but it's not always a pitching staff that's just going to overpower you. It's an experienced pitching staff that's going to throw to spots, and they're going to change speeds, and they're going to do some good things there. So I think defense, especially once you get to the district level, it would be a concern of mine. But I tell you, with Swackhammer and Downs and Heskett and Berger, those are all guys very capable on the mound of giving their team a chance to win on that night. Now, I know, Jeremy, you were with me that day at the VA, just as you had a chance to look them over that day. What are some things that jump out at you as good or maybe a concern?
Well, you know, the first thing that comes to my mind, I think we had the conversation that, you know, we saw the kind of the Achilles heel of the Pioneers in the first part of that game. And then, you know, right before our eyes, you know, it the page turns and you see just how the lineup wears on you and how their offensive prowess can really get on a roll. And regardless of how good a pitcher you are, you know, you just may not be able to shut them down once they get going. So I think, you know, in the game that we were able to do that, you kind of saw both sides of that. But I think maybe the most impressive thing when you talk about a tournament run is just how resilient they were. And when you have senior leaders, and the competitive nature and the feeling that, hey, you know, we can open it up one inning and score six or seven runs. So, you know, we know that we're never out of it. And that's probably a characteristic that, you know, I would point to as far as a opportunity for a great tournament run in a very, very difficult Division III.
I love what you said there about wearing the opponent down a little bit, because I think that goes back to the depth I was talking about. I know a lot of teams like Courthouse that day, Waverly over this past weekend. I know it happened to us a little bit out at Paint Valley the other night, is you get to a point where they just keep coming at you 1 through 9 to the point where a lot of times a big 2-out hit can lead to a 2-out error and things like that. Like I know, right. Waverly's a really good baseball team and they kind of kicked it around the other day. Coach Allen told me in a text and kind of helped them open up. But I think what Coach Allen sometimes doesn't give his guys enough credit for is it's that constant pressure and that constant depth that they keep throwing at pitchers and defenses that can sometimes lead high school teams into that. So I think, Jeremy, you make a great observation there that can play a huge role in the postseason for them. So, yeah, Zane Trace, a really hot baseball team, in for a really good draw here and hopefully a nice postseason run. On that note, Jeremy, I want to take a look at our extra innings segment. In this week's extra innings, we look at a previous prediction, a unique quality, reason for parity, and individually beyond the POI. So without further delay, Jeremy, you hit lead off with a softball response. I will follow with a baseball response. Let's go to extra innings.
Do you still think 3 losses will win the league, or should the number be changed to 1 or 2?
Well, 3 is looking a little more unrealistic at this point, but you know, we talked about that last year, and very quickly it turned the other way. So certainly if you have 1 loss, you're going to win it. But I definitely, if I had to make a prediction at this point, I think, honestly, I really think everybody's going to lose 1 more game at some point before the league schedule's over. So probably 2 is that number.
Well, I would say Westfall and Python on the baseball side of things has made 3 really, really difficult to see happening. You have to feel like one of them, obviously they're going to play head-to-head, so there's a second loss for somebody, but you have to feel like someone's going to at least stay at 2. You might even have to run the table from this point to get the outright. So I think it's the ability of those 2 teams to win the 1-run games that have put them in this position. But yeah, 3 is just not realistic anymore.
What is something unique in this year's league compared to most years in the SVC?
What sticks out to me is the exceptional pitching performances throughout the league, talking top to bottom. And it's not limited to just the top few teams or, you know, what everybody thought were the top maybe elite 2 or 3 pitchers. You know, and this is just a few years after moving the rubber back, and I find it very impressive how well pitchers have adjusted and how pitching instead of just hard throwing has become the rule more than the exception, as maybe it was in the past where you had a couple hard throwers that dominated the league. I just think that you know, you've got 7 or 8, 9, some teams have multiple pitchers capable of shutting a team down.
Very few questions have come in the inbox that have made me think of a harder than this one. This was a really intriguing question to me. And I think on the baseball side, I would go with the amount of lefties on the mound across the SBC. It's very possible you'll go 2-3 straight games where you'll have a guy out there throwing it with the wrong hand. Obviously, Farmer's very talented. Vickers, Southeastern has a couple lefties. Arledge, college-bound lefty, coming back off injury. Swackhammer has 5 wins over at Zane Trace. So there's just a lot of different versatility from the left side, and a lot of them are very athletic. They take away the running game with their ability to do some of the intangibles, and I think that's very unique to our league, which is full of mainly Division III high school.
Is the reason for middle parity more because of top-heavy talent or more great teams in this year's league compared to last year?
Definitely, I think the league is much better all overall. Mentioned that earlier. I really feel like every team is good or better than they were last year. And overall, the talent is much deeper and much more balanced than it was a year ago. And, you know, as we look to the tournament draw this coming weekend, I certainly feel like I'm much more comfortable. I'll just say I'm much more comfortable with the SVC team's chances to succeed in the postseason this year.
Well, on the baseball side of things, again, this is another one from the inbox, and on the baseball side of things, I just look at it as both. I mean, you have the same teams back on top, and they're a year better, but the overall league is just night and day better. You look at the bottom of the standings there. Southeastern's already beaten Piketon. Paint Valley's been right there with a Uniota win, and they've knocked on the door against Piketon and Westfall. Adena had Piketon beat twice and couldn't get off the field. So every team across the board is really good. Uniota's going to be a bear the last 4 or 5 games now that their pitching staff's healthy. We just talked about how hot Zane Trace is. So this is a really, really good baseball league. Top heavy, middle, the pack, however you want to describe it, you're just talking about 8 good high school baseball teams.
Name a player who is not necessarily in the POY discussion but deserves credit for the great year he or she is having.
Two kids that come to mind for me, and kids that one I've had an opportunity to see a lot, and one not so much. But I've been really impressed with Adrienne Dunn at Piketon, what she's able to do as a pitcher and as a hitter. And Shania Irvin at Huntington, just really impressed with the way she goes about her game. And, you know, I think these are two kids that are consistently impact games for their team, regardless if they've got 2 or 3 hits. They can change the outlook of an inning, even if they make an out. And, you know, those are the things I look for when considering, you know, an overall value of a player.
Well, on the baseball side of things, I guess I first had to figure out who I thought was definitely in the POY discussion. It obviously starts with Zach Farmer, as far as I'm concerned, Stone Rock or Lewis from Westfall, with those two teams at the top. So then from that point, I started looking Swackhammer down to Zane Trace, Thompson, Paint Valley. But I would probably go Bryce Vickers. I mean, this kid's had a really, really good year on the mound. His versatility, maybe not having the year at the plate that he wants to have, but I tell you what, his ability on the mound, beat Adena 1-0 the other night. He beat Paint Valley 1-0 early in the year. On a night he doesn't pitch, he puts on the lefty mitt and goes behind the plate and catches a game. Just so many things he brings to a team that allows Coach Carroll to get his best 9 athletes in the 9 correct spots. So you talk about seniors, you talk about experience and talent, I would say Bryce Vickers. Well, fans, a lot of different ways you can get involved in the show. We mentioned the inbox earlier, admin1@svcsportzone.com. You can also check out SVC Sports Zone on Facebook and Twitter. And then, of course, the DBK website. You'll want to check out all the past shows. Just click SVC Sports Talk over on the right side. You can go back, listen to Season 1 shows as well as Season 2 and kind of follow and catch up. I know a lot of people with the busy spring have just told me that they're just now making comments to me about a couple weeks back. They're like, man, in the spring, it's just for some reason I can't keep up on the shows there as much. So they are listening. It's just maybe a week or two behind. So that's fine. That's why it's there. Go back and take a listen. I know the couple people still went back and listened to our baseball game there at the VA a couple weeks back. So appreciate them doing that. As we move forward here, Jeremy, not a lot going on in track this past week. I know Uniota was very successful up in Circleville. They beat a good Maysville team, I noticed. The Uniota girls fifth in that one. A couple, I think Piketon was down at Waverly a little bit, but not a lot going on this past week. I know as the calendar turns May, we'll get going to Ross County and then the SVC as well. And those are both out of the Dean of this year. Just a quick comment, Jeremy, on track as they transition into, I don't want to say an extended preseason because the invites do matter. And you know, obviously to those kids, it's competition and they want to go. But the meat and potatoes, if you will, really coming when the calendar turns May, would you agree?
Absolutely. I think one thing that you really have to appreciate about the athletes in track is, you know, they're basically on a regimen, a training regimen, to where it's on a timeline, and they want to be at certain points each week of the year as they head towards the postseason, so that they can be peaking at the right time. And you know, hey, we talked about, you know, how prom and graduation and all the things in the spring, the weather affects the baseball and softball athlete. But, you know, when you're training and you're preparing, you know, to be at your optimal best, you know, on a given day at the league track meet or at the district track meet, you know, it takes a lot of mental focus to accomplish that. And sometimes I think we forget it's not just about just the raw athleticism.
You know, you make a great point there, because we talked last spring about this very thing with weather. You know, some of these kids, they train basically their whole entire career to maybe have one opportunity to set a certain league mark. You know, maybe if it's a Cheney in the pole vault, or if last year was a Hall in the sprinting events, or in the different things. And what happens is, if you show up on that night and the wind is blowing 25 mile per hour in your face, that's your only night to do it. So you make a great point there that the weather conditions and some of the different things can really, really impact track as well. So we'll be talking a lot more about track here in the weeks to come as those particular athletes get ready for those important meets. I did want to get to the inbox one last time, Jeremy, before we get out of here this week. It's asking about the tournament draw. That'll be coming up on Sunday. And looking at an overview of the seating, it was asking what teams that we maybe thought were best built for the postseason. And in the overall league, if it was elite enough for the same postseason successes maybe we're used to. Just why don't you go from a softball perspective first and kind of give us an overview of what you think can be in store for the SVC in the second season?
Well, as I, you know, spoke of earlier, I really do look for a little more success across the board this year. It's funny, as you were talking earlier, you know, about Zane Trace and how, you know, maybe they weren't treated fairly last year in the baseball draw. It kind of led me back to at the basketball draw when we had the conversation about an SVC SOC challenge. That really is the challenge that happens in baseball is kind of both of these leagues, which are elite Division III baseball leagues, flexing their muscles and seeing if they can line things up that best benefits their league. And sometimes that's at the expense of others. And that's really my biggest concern in looking at the draw. You know, last year in softball, Zane Trace and Westfall had to play each other right off the bat, eliminating one of our elite teams, you know, before the district level. It's really important that, you know, we can split our teams up and give them the opportunity, because I definitely think, you know, we can win four four sectional championships if it's able to break down, you know, in our favor. But you know, the SOC in softball is just ridiculous, just like it is in baseball, and those mm-hmm. teams are very, very strong, and it's you know, you got to pay close attention to those matchups, and sometimes the ties that bind or those relationships, and if you're the odd man out in a sectional, that can really hurt your chances.
Well, there's no doubt about it. I think on the baseball side of things, I guess if the brackets would allow it, there would be as many as seven teams that could get out. I know that happened there about 4 or 5 years ago. Obviously, everything has to happen perfectly for that to happen. But I think a very realistic number of 5 or 6 could definitely happen. You know, when you just throw out names like Shepard, Vickers, Thompson, Farmer, Arledge, Tisdale, Bothman, Dye, Stone Rock, you know, Swackhammer, Dam. There's just so many arms out there that are capable of taking the mound and pitching a great game. And when you throw in some solid defense behind, some offense, some timely hitting, it just gives you a chance. And I think that's kind of what you say. Jeremy, from the softball side of things, we have the same thing. I've heard you talk all year long about the depth of pitching in the league. Mm-hmm. It's not just those top two or three teams anymore. A fifth, sixth, seventh place team even has a girl that can go to the circle and give her team a chance to win. And I think that's what's going to happen here in the baseball side of things this year. So like any close games, as we've seen in our league standings, it's going to come down to the difference between the SVC getting 4 or 5 teams to the district compared to maybe 7. It's probably going to come down to some 2-out hits. It's going to come down to a routine play versus an error. It's going to probably be a little thing of maybe getting a bunt down. And those are some of the things I would look at. But as we get closer to the postseason, we'll really break down these brackets. But I see no reason, Jeremy, as you give us a closing remark here, tell me if you agree. I see no reason why both baseball and softball couldn't put half the league into the next level and perhaps even a fourth of it into the regional level.
Well, certainly. And, you know, with the girls, there are only the 2 Division III sectionals. But at the same time, I think the opportunity for each league team to win their first game, I think, is there. I mean, almost across the board. So, you know, I really like where we're sitting right now. And then seeing some of the non-league teams, I really like where the SVC sits.
Well, good stuff, fans, this week. I encourage you to keep sending it in, and we'll keep talking about it. So until next time, for Triple Crown Family Fun Center, for Valero and Doc Good, appreciate all of their support as well. For Bruce Knox and DBK Media Services, and for my co-host, Jeremy Ward, this is Shane Combs reminding you to keep visiting SVCSportZone.com, where we are 100% SVC, 100% of the time.
You've been listening to the Triple Crown Family Fun Center, SVC Sports Talk. SVC Sports Talk is brought to you by SVCSportsZone.com and Triple Crown Family Fun Center. Join us next time for the Triple Crown Family Fun Center, SVC Sports Talk. And visit SVCSportsZone.com, where we're 100% SVC 100% of the time.